Welcome to the Interviews Podcast.
Welcome, Interisti, to episode 87 of the Interviews Podcast. We are here for just a little check-in. Just a little check-in with Interisti now that the international tournaments have kicked off, or in the case of the Copa America, are kicking off very shortly. We've had a lot of news coming out as far as the transfers are concerned, but probably not a ton that really excites Interisti. In fact, there's been a little bit of negativity around some of these transfers, which is interesting and something that I think both Johnny and I want to touch on. But before we go ahead and do that, let's talk about this Euro 2024 tournament. For me, Johnny, it's been really, really fun. There was one game that sucked, and you can imagine who played in that game. But outside of that, every game this tournament has had some good drama to it, some excitement to it. How are you enjoying these games so far?
Yeah, no, it's been a blast. From an outside perspective, for most of the games, obviously, you know, the Italy one I was a little bit more invested in, but it's been a lot of fun. I'm really eager to see how some of these games play out and how the rest of this tournament certainly plays out, because we might have a chance, and we also might have a tough road on our hands here. So,
well, Italy did get 3 points in their first game versus Albania. It had
Was it Italy or was it Inter?
It had Inter's fingerprints all over that game. Interisti have been protagonists of this tournament so far. Let's just go through the Interisti that have made appearances here. So we have Sommer for Switzerland against Hungary. Did not keep a clean sheet, unfortunately, but did play well. Good distribution for the back. Had himself a good performance. Let's see. Spain-Croatia. Was there any Interisti in there? Former Interista Marcelo Brozovic. Italy-Albania. So this one had 5 Interisti in the starting lineup. So it was Bastoni, Di Marco, Fratesi, Barella, and for the Albanian side, Aslani. And from the very start of the game, Inter's fingerprints. Di Marco plays a throw-in that comes really short to Bastoni. Bayrami, who also plays in Serie A, ends up putting it past Donnarumma for the 1-0 2 minutes into the game, which is the fastest goal in Euros history. I think a former guest of the show, Average Chiesa, actually, after that happened, said, of course, it was the Inter players who started to get on the fact that it was the Interisti. What was your feeling in that moment when, you know, the mess up came from our boys?
To be honest, I was disappointed with the decision making by Di Marco in that situation. You know, you expect him to be a little bit smarter throwing that ball in. He had Barella right there, so there was really no reason to play that. Honestly, it kind of, not the same. I mean, I don't think Perisic was at fault with what I'm about to say, but like, it did bring back that Inter Bologna game to my mind with what happened with that throw in that led to Radu making that unfortunate error. It was just a lousy start. I didn't panic just because, you know, no offense to Albania, but I wasn't really worried about them as a threat. So yeah, like, I mean, just not the best of starts for sure.
Not the best of starts, but also from the second after they scored that goal, Italy completely and totally dominated that game. Probably the best performance in the Spalletti era so far at the helm of Italy. And the Inter players were the standouts. For me, Barella was the man of the match. He had himself an excellent goal, but before that, in order to tie it up, I think it happened just a few minutes later. Let me just get the thing here. Bastoni scored in the 11th. So 10 minutes later, Pellegrini plays a ball into the box. Bastoni gets on the end of it, lashes it into the top corner past Da Costa. A really good goal to get us right back into it. Were you surprised that Spalletti went with Bastoni Calafiori in the middle instead of Bastoni Buongiorno or another combination of center back pairing?
To be honest, not really. You know, I thought that he went with the two most informed center backs, really. You know, I mean, you look at the way Calafiori was able to finish up this season and just the high that he was on. Not that Buongiorno had played poorly by any means. I think if you really look at it from Serie A as a whole, Buongiorno might have been the most consistent center back of the three. But I think he went with the two guys who are the most informed right now. And it didn't bother me. You know, if anything, I was more bothered with Di Lorenzo starting over Cambiasso than really any of the center backs.
I was bothered by the fact that it was four at the back instead of three, to be honest. When I saw the day before the Gazzetta's probable lineup, obviously, you know, the Bosnia performance was better than what we had been seeing. And I was hoping to see a three at the back, but like a lot of people had mentioned on Twitter, like it actually played out in reality, when we did have the ball, it did shift to a three at the back with Di Lorenzo really tucking in and Chiesa holding the width on the right, Di Marco being that left wing back. So that's how it played out. But I was hoping for a back line that was ultimately going to be Darmian, Buongiorno, Bastoni, but we can't get upset. Even the fact that it was two left-footed center backs, they both played really well. I thought Bastoni did well, despite the fact that he was more on the right-hand side of the pitch, and that's primarily where he was getting his space. And then we go to Italy scoring their second goal in the 16th minute, just a few minutes after Bastoni puts it in. This one was a banger up there for goal of the tournament, although Romania had a couple of those. Today, a ball comes into the box towards Di Marco, actually. It comes back out to Barella at the top of the box, and he volleys it one time into the corner. Thoughts on Barella's performance? Although Chiesa won man of the match, for me, it was Barella. Was he the standout for you as well?
100%. I think from start to finish, that might have been his best performance for the national team, if I really think about it. You know, there's been times where he's been missing and gone in and out of games. This, from minute one, he was a threat. He was the engine in the midfield. I mean, there's nothing about his game that I didn't like. And when Chiesa won, I mean, I thought it was an absolute joke. You know, I could not believe that they actually gave him the man of the match. But you know, in the grand scheme of things, that's really probably going to be the only trophy a Juve player wins this year. So, hey, you know, enjoy it.
Oh, man. Here we go. The pod's going to get it. But, yeah, so Italy takes the 2-1 lead. There was no point in time for the rest of the game where it really felt like we were out of it. If there's something to be critical of, so Fratesi found himself in a lot of good positions to score. I actually had him anytime goal scorer. I think it was like plus 400. Felt like a really good bet given the fact that we see in important matches that he is able to get on the ball in the box. Hits the post. Ultimately, that was saved, but I saw Strakocha goes on to the post. Was fed in by, I believe, Di Marco in the second half as well. Just, you know, not able to put it first time into the back of the net. What did you think of Fratesi's performance in a start that I think a lot of people were surprised to see him get?
Yeah, another one that I was very pleased with his performance. You know, I do see some growth in his game, which I think is huge for us going forward, especially going into next season with the amount of competitions we'll be participating in. So I like this. You know, I like that Spalletti has faith in him. I think he does see him as like another goal scorer going forward. I don't know if he really sees him as providing much in the midfield, but I think in terms of, yeah, being able to get you know, on the end of crosses and stuff like that into the box or passes into the box, whatever it may be, I think he sees him as a potential, you know, asset in there. So we'll see what if he continues to get the starts. I'm actually going to be really interested to see what happens with Thursday's potential lineup. But for all intents and purposes, I think that he is deserving of another start for that game as well.
It's pretty obvious that if Fratesi is going to be in a three-man midfield, that the other two midfielders have to take the bulk of the responsibility for building out from the back and for the distribution. And Jorginho is a natural at that. Barella is very adept at, you know, recycling the ball and being an option deep. It's just not Fratesi's game. So what I feel some top-level coaches like Inzaghi and Spalletti are doing is just, instead of forcing that to be a part of his game, they're just adapting the play around him in order to emphasize his qualities. And it has to be said, like, he did get a lot of chances. Like, he was a threat and he was a danger. And I think, and we didn't look like we were, hurt defensively by his, proclivity to go forward. Have you seen the Spalletti cam yet after the game when they were showing his instructions during the match?
I do. I found it hilarious, and especially with how well he articulates his words for the team. Like, there was no struggle understanding what he was saying. He wanted to get his point across to his players, and I think, I mean, it was awesome. I loved it, and he might be. Yeah, I think he probably will be go down as like the most animated and vocal manager at this Euros, and well deserved. You know,
he's. I really want him to succeed, obviously. I'm an Italy fan, so that's, that should go without saying. But I do think the way that things went down for him at Napoli wasn't necessarily fair to the respect that he deserves. He hasn't had the most winningest career, but he's been, a very interesting manager on a tactical level. He's definitely adapted his style of play across a number of different teams, and he just really is one of the good guys of football. So it was, that video was funny, but I bring it up because he did call out Fratesi a few times, especially, with regard to his defensive work. So let's see if he does want to go with, a different option there in the midfield. I wouldn't personally, because that would mean relying on the likes of Cristante or Fagioli, which is not exactly what you want to see as an Italy fan.
Yeah,
so,
no, I don't want any of those guys, especially against Spain.
Yeah. So Darmian also made a performance. We do have to say that. Made an appearance. Came in the 83rd minute. Not much to do, but there was another player that I wanted to ask you about, a player that's been linked with Inter in the past. Likely we'll never see him at our club, but he's a player that I'm really, really intrigued by. And I thought yesterday was a really positive sign, despite the fact that he didn't get on the score sheet. Gianluca Scamacca, not necessarily dangerous from a, being in a position to get chances, but he was a real focal point as far as creating chances in and around the box. What did you think of Scamacca's performance, especially given that we are on this search for the next Italian, number nine to come through? What did you think of Gianluca?
I think it was okay. There were some times where I wish he would be a little bit more physical and know how to use his body and his height to his advantage. That was some of the things that were kind of upsetting. I think there was times where he could have outmuscled defenders or made moves in the box to be able to get on the end of crosses and stuff. And I don't know if it's his read of the game. I don't know if it's his unwillingness to get in the air and fight for those balls. Listen, he is talented. There's no denying that. I'm not trying to criticize him. I just think that there's just some things that he needs to work on. It's crazy because if you take the strengths of Trezeguet and you take the strengths of Scamacca, you have probably like the greatest striker in Europe right now. Because Trezeguet is such a fox in the box, and Scamacca could really make magic out of nothing, and he has a little bit more pace and a little better passer. He is a much better passer than Trezeguet, but yeah, I just think if we see that growth and that fearlessness develop in his game, that'll be huge for Italy in the future.
Would you stick with this formation moving forward?
Yeah, I think so. I think it allows a lot of fluidity within the players. There's a lot of guys who could make overlapping runs, guys who could be interchangeable in specific situations and stuff, and kind of everyone can, in one way or another, cover for their teammates. So for me, I think, you know what, it's working. Stick with it. But one thing that's good with Spalletti, like, let's say if it isn't working in the Spain game, he does have the tactical acumen to know how to adjust it and put his guys and line them up in the right way to be able to adjust properly. So I think you start off with this against Spain, see how it happens in the first 20, 25 minutes, maybe even the first half. And if it's nil-nil, but you see opportunities aren't creating and chances aren't, you know, developing for the team, then you have the ability to go to that 3-5-2 if needed. And you can maybe take off a guy like Fratesi and bring on, you know, Fagioli, or if you want to bring on Cristante, which I don't think would be the smart thing, but if you want to push Barella further out the pitch, you have that, you know, flexibility with them. So yeah, I say stick with it for now, but if it's not working, you got options.
I think we are going to see the 3-5-2 at some point against Spain. Not necessarily because I don't expect the initial formation to work, but I do think that he is going to want some other, you know, a more defensive option if we are able to take the lead. So I do think we see a 3-5-2 at some point against Spain. And speaking of Spain, our next opponent, what's your confidence level heading into that game after they spanked Croatia 3-0? But I do have to say, I didn't think Croatia, their level of play, deserved a 3-0 beating. They had plenty of opportunities. It was a much closer game than the scoreline suggests. So yeah, while you might see everyone going crazy about Spain, whatever podcast you listen to, whatever, you know, headlines you read that they just blew away Croatia, if you watched the 90 minutes, it wasn't like that at all. Like, they put away their opportunities. They absolutely deserve to win. But I thought the scoreline was a little harsh on Croatia, which gives me confidence going into this next game. How do you feel about the Spain side?
They don't really scare me. I don't see them as a realistic threat for the Euros. And I think that if we play to the best of our abilities and negate their strengths, which is that boring, you know, pass, tiki-taka nonsense. Like you said, I don't think that scoreline really showed what really took place in that game. We'll see what happens. I mean, I think that we have the pieces in place to be able to not even just go man for man for them, but actually beat them and beat them at their own game. And this isn't the same Italy, you know, of years past, who would just sit back and absorb pressure and allow you, you know, to try to lull you to a false sense of confidence. And then boom, we hit you, you know, on the count. This is a more pragmatic, you know, Italy. And I'm excited to see what Spalletti continues to do with them. And I think if there's anyone who can, you know, maneuver his opposing manager, it's Luciano Spalletti with this national team. I don't think Mancini would have been able to do it if he had this same team and this same opportunity. So it's it'll be interesting to see, you know, how we come out and if we have a drive and a desire to really just, like, take advantage of this opportunity and really stick it to them. You know, I think mentality will be also a big factor for them.
Do you have any parts of Spain's game that worry you a little bit? For me, Lamine Yamal, who I know, you know, I don't want to join anyone's hype train, especially a kid that's 16 years old at this point.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
against Di Marco, you know, playing on Di Marco's side and also consequentially, you know, Calafiori's side as well. He's a great player, but he's not super experienced. Yamal's dangerous and Di Marco has defensive liabilities. That for me would be something that I'm looking for a little bit more help. I don't want to take away Barella's strengths by having him drop, you know, so deep to help out, but that could be a potential danger area. Is there anyone else that you think Spalletti has to consider as far as changing his game plan to take care of?
In terms of, like, I mean, I would agree with you on Yamal, of course. You know, I mean, I don't want to make a 16-year-old seem like, you know, he's all that that they have going for them. You know, Morata's good, obviously, at playing, you know, off of the player, other player defenders' left shoulders. I mean, granted, we might be able to hit him with some offside traps and stuff. But he's a guy that, you know, he's a good finisher for Spain, and he does seem to show up in big moments for them. So I could see him being a threat. And another name, you know, Spalletti is very familiar with. I think Fabian Ruiz, you know, he looked like a player with a chip on his shoulder somewhat. Didn't have the best year with PSG, but he looks like he is really clicking for Spain. And we saw with the goal that he scored that, I mean, that was a beautiful,
quality player.
Yeah. And I think that he should be someone that our midfield should be focused on. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see for sure what kind of tactics Spalletti comes up with, how he tries to negate those players, if those are even the guys that they consider, you know, like real threats and stuff. So, but yeah, I mean, to me, those might be the three players that I would want to focus on in this game.
Do you see Albania being able to take points off of either Spain or Croatia?
I really don't. I'm not trying
it's
to knock
funny
them
because
or anything,
a lot of people were talking them up coming into the tournament, and they could potentially end up on 0 points. I think I heard one expert saying that Italy would come fourth, and Albania third. So, let's see how it shakes out. It's possible.
I did forget Nico Williams. I think that's another guy that we should. His pace could be troublesome too. On the opposite side, where I think that could be, you know, a little bit of a headache for Di Lorenzo. So not that he really had that big of an impact in the Croatia game, but I do think that his pace and his ability to cross and pass and dribble in tight spaces, that could be a guy to worry about for sure.
Best team at the Euros for you so far? We started recording this while France was still playing. Tomorrow we have Portugal making their debut in the tournament. But so far, team that has, you know, has you thinking, oh, that could be a potential tournament winner.
I mean, I don't want to be boring and go with like the obvious pick, but right now for me, the team that looked the best, and I know it was only Scotland, I understand that, but Germany looks like a real threat. And I love a lot of the players that they have on their team. Musiala, Florian Wirtz, who I have as my player I was, you know, buying stock in. One of the four guys that I was buying stock in before this tournament. And they just, I think they are the, you know, the real team to be a threat. You know, I know a lot of the pundits were talking about England and it's coming home and this is it. This is the team, blah. That team was so boring, and Phil Foden.
How are they the betting favorite?
I don't get it. But Phil Foden looked like a bum. Listen, he had a great year with City. I don't deny that. But he did not look good. I mean, obviously Jude Bellingham is Jude Bellingham, and he might win, you know, the Ballon d'Or for a reason, and probably rightfully so. But with all that hype and all that firepower, to squeak out a win against Slovenia, I don't know.
It does feel like a style of play issue. Like, they're not
100%.
There's like they're trying to be something that is a little at this point in football, a little like old fashioned. You know, they're trying to keep hold of the ball for these extended periods of time, but it doesn't lead to a ton of chances being created. Obviously, in the second half of that game, Serbia started to come into it, but...
Oh, did I say my bad, Serbia, yeah.
Serbia, yeah. So, yeah, I don't know how they were the betting favorite coming into the tournament, but I would agree. I would agree on Germany. The other big teams, you know, Spain, we talked about that scoreline definitely flatters the performance. The Netherlands didn't look particularly great against Poland.
But that's
Zielinski potentially got hurt, by the way. News coming out today.
Oh, did he? He did look like he picked up a little something in the game, but then he just kept playing, so I assumed, oh, it's nothing too worrisome.
They said,
but
they said it's not too worrisome, but something happened. Romania blew away Ukraine, but Ukraine definitely dominated large parts of that game and then just got, you know, just got beat by some Golassos. So surprised by them. And then our favorite, Mr. Romelu, had himself a day. What was, I have to just open SofaScore because I'm just curious, like, how the algorithm rates that game. 6.0. That was bad. It was tough to watch because it was just like slowly, it's like slowly watching someone just lose themselves.
It's kind of funny though, when just to go back on the Romania Ukraine game, like they were talking about like betting favorites and who you should put money on for the golden boot, and you know they were like, oh, and the sleeper pick is Artem Dovbyk, and I was like, why would you pick a Ukrainian striker? Even before the game, I was like, he's probably gonna play three games and that's it. So really, you need him to score at least five in three games. I was like, and he ain't gonna do that. I was like, that would have been a way. And he was like, oh, but it's 45-1 odds. Doesn't mean he's a player worth putting money on. Like,
yeah, he only won the Pichichi because of that last game. They tried to get him as many goals as possible, and the against a relegated side. So
I know I was kind of rude, but
okay. Any players at the Euros that you've been particularly impressed by?
I mean, we talked about Florian Wirtz. Now, are we talking about just like players that, you know, can be seasoned, or are we just trying to talk about maybe some like young players?
Some young players. I mean, like an obvious one, but that really stood out. But like, I just enjoyed his performance. Šeško, even though Slovenia didn't win that game, like his shots from distance are lethal. I mean, that dude is going to... He's going to be an absolute weapon for some team. He just re-upped with Leipzig, so he's got like 70 million plus written all over him. Could be an absolute star.
Without a doubt, yeah. Trying to think. You know, one of the guys that I was excited about didn't even play, so I can't even say him.
Who?
Martin Baturina with...
Croatia?
With Croatia, yeah.
He should be playing.
He should be. Like, I think it's time to like let some of these older guys kind of step aside. And I'm trying to think who else. I was disappointed with the Danish side because what's his name? Frendrup didn't get a call up.
Yeah, Frendrup, Matt O'Reilly didn't get a call. That team desperately needed a refresh, but our boy Chris Eriksen gets on the score sheet.
He was one guy I was going to say that I was actually really happy about because he actually had a great game.
I'm very
happy with for him. But
I was thinking while watching that, like what Inzaghi could have done with him. That could have been a really exciting.
He's still a guy that I'm always going to think like, what if, you know, like.
Well, I wonder if it would have been Eriksen that he moved to deep-lying playmaker instead of Çalhanoğlu. Like, I wonder. I think Çalha is the better fit.
I don't think so. I don't think he would have done it. I think he would have kept, you know.
I think Çalha is the better fit, more athletic, can cover more ground.
Yeah, exactly.
But it would be interesting to see if he tried it, you know, just knowing what Chris's ability to play the ball. He still got it. I mean, he's 32 years old, but he's still got an amazing touch, amazing technique on him. Very emotional to see him score because I remember crying my eyes out when I thought he died on the pitch.
Yeah, that was so scary to see. I'm happy he's back for sure. So, and I think one of the other players that I'm excited about, he hasn't even played yet, but we'll see what happens tomorrow when they play Portugal. But Patrick Schick,
he's been a player that's delivered in international tournaments before.
Yep, he has.
Has scored bangers.
So midfield bangers. So Hopefully he'll get a chance to perform and put in another one. So
is he a player that you could ever see coming to Inter?
Could I see it? No. I was going to say yes, but then I was like, the injury history, and then he can have those moments where he goes cold and stuff. So I'll say no, sadly.
Speaking of players that are coming to Inter, I think let's move on to some of these links that we've seen. We've seen coming up. A lot to talk about. I think I want to get your reactions on some of these. So let's start from the back. Let's start with Josep Martinez. He looks like he is going to be the selection for Inter's number two goalkeeper next year, an eventual number one. Essentially, the profile that Inter has been looking for is a younger goalkeeper that showed a lot of promise that could sit under Sommer for a year and eventually take over. Bento Krupski was the target. We know he was the target because Bento himself mentioned Inter in interviews. We saw Mike Conn actually confirm, oh, that's going to get done. I'm very confident. So it wasn't really a secret that Bento was their number one option. It seems like the demands have not gotten to a point where Inter is satisfied with. So they've moved on to negotiating deals with other options. I don't think that until one of those other options is done, I don't think that you can completely rule out Bento. Again, these are things that you're negotiating, right? I think Atletico is in a position where if they see Inter move on, they're not worried because they know that they have a really good keeper that someone is going to want and pay the money for. So Inter is not in really the best negotiating position. The only thing that would change that is if the player wanted it, and the player wanted it bad enough to make a big stink about it. I think we saw an Instagram image of him wearing not an Instagram image, just an image of Bento wearing an Inter jersey.
Did we confirm that was actually him, though?
I just saw it on Twitter. I didn't dive too much into it. I guess I need to
it looks like him, but I don't know if that's actually him. Like, I mean, it could be.
But for the story, why don't you want to just buy into it?
Sure, let's buy into it. Oh my gosh, I let's can't buy believe he was wearing an injured kid as a kid. Crazy.
So, but doesn't that feel like the only way this would turn around and go back towards? I do want to talk about Josep Martinez, and I do want to bring up another potential option. But on the Bento front, doesn't it feel like at this point, if that is the deal that ends up getting done, that the only way it gets done is if the player intervenes in this negotiation and tries to put pressure on his club?
Oh, 100%. He has to put pressure on them to force this move. I think Inter, I know that there's possibility of players going the other way for the Genoa deal, which we can get into, and maybe that is more appealing to management instead of dishing out full cash for Bento. But we still have Brazão, right? So why don't we just here's your replacement keeper, take some money off of that price.
I hadn't thought about that at all, but that's not a bad idea.
I mean, even though I don't know if it's actually any realistic by any means, but I think, if Inter wants to keep prices down, that might be the way to try to get it done. But I think the player needs to put pressure on management. You know, they promised him last summer that they would allow it this summer. So it's well, you said it. Why are you making this more difficult than you have to now?
The only reason that I don't completely rule that the Bento deal is dead yet is because we've seen Inter have a player in their hand until the last minute and lose him, and then we see the will of the player end up succeeding and pushing a move through to Inter even though other teams are more advanced. So you never know what's going to happen in the mercato.
We just had that with Pavard last year.
We just had that with Pavard. And it's strange that a former Inter player like Mike Conn, an Inter legend, would say that
Julio Cesar.
And Julio Cesar, exactly.
There is a lot about around Bento, and now everything ends up accelerating in the other direction. So again, those are just reports. The last thing I'll say on Bento is that I do think, for me, I'm not going to be disappointed if it's this other option, but for me, he is still at least a degree above Josef Martinez or Okoye or any of the other options.
Oh, you're talking about Bento is?
Bento for me, yeah.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, like he's... If all things the same and I have my choice of any keeper, I'm taking Bento every time. Yeah. Not even a hesitation. So...
Yeah, I don't want to sound disappointed or start promoting negativity about a player who could end up being really good for us.
No, I'll never do that.
Yeah.
Oh man, that one broke me. It's like an SNL skit.
Yeah.
Okay, let's start talking about this next guy. So Josef Martinez, who was Genoa's goalkeeper or is Genoa's goalkeeper, it looks like a deal can be done for 10 million plus some add-ons, potentially a counterpart. Those counterparts have been named as Stankovic, Oristano, Esposito, Satriano. Who else was?
Take Satriano and Esposito, please. I don't want to give up Stankovic for anything, really. But
I don't want to package both of those guys, though. I would package Oristano with one of them. Because one of Satriano or Esposito, they're both
trash.
Someone's going to be worth.
They're both trash, no. Bro. No. They're both trash. Satriano's not even scoring in the French league.
Satriano doesn't score goals, but he's not trash. He's more of a...
And you're
he's a good...
I don't need you to do anything else but score goals. And you can't even do that for me. Oristano is going to go somewhere, whether it's... You know, for another player that we can talk about, or it's for this guy, that's fine. If you want to throw in Oristano and Sebastiano, cool. I'm fine with that too.
You
better get rid of Satriano. This like no loan. I want him gone.
They're gonna be gone. They have to be gone. if we're gonna be able to do anything else with this team, but. As far as Josef Martinez goes, he could be a really, really good goalkeeper. Definitely has the potential. I think something that's making Inter fans not necessarily super excited is because
his
everyone
Uncle Sharma's
bought into
video that he put up.
The near post, yeah.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Sharma. When you listen to this episode, I want you to think about the hate that you've spewed out there, that now people are being able to... Well, Sharma said he sucks and he can get beat near post. Now he has to be trash. So you've already ruined this kid's career before he gets to Inter. Thanks a lot, Sharma.
What is it with Inter content creators and killing goalkeepers' careers? It seems to be a common thread through a number of you guys.
I mean,
I'm high on
Martinez.
But...
I haven't killed his career yet. I've only killed Radu and Luis Maximiano.
I'm high on him.
I think he's a very good consolation.
You said I only killed and then proceeded to name multiple careers.
Two guys.
OJ
killed two people and got away with it. So like, why? You know, why are we? You know.
Wow. That was good. All right, how do I segue back into Josef Martinez? So anyway, yeah, so we've had some Interisti come out and basically not be as excited about Martinez. I think this is happening because everyone was excited about Bento, and this does feel like a step down. It likely is a small step down. But let's talk about him. Physically, he has the tools. Physically, he has the tools to be a really good goalkeeper.
He's a big goalkeeper.
Shot stopping is good. He can shot stop. Distribution is good. It's not, you know, Onana, but he's good, and he's also young, and he can get better.
And he did go to the same school that Onana went to. So, like, another La Masia product, so he's definitely good with the ball at his feet. He may not have used it as much at his time at Genoa because of the style of play they had and because they were typically absorbing all that pressure that he couldn't really play at the back the same way. But he's got the skills. So
He's got the skills. And there's also, as far as issues are concerned, for me, I see a goalkeeper that has like positioning issues, which feels really fixable. Working with a top goalkeeping coach, working with someone like Sommer, I think he can close up the holes in his game and we can have a really good keeper for the next 10 years, which is what Inter's goal was going into this. So if it ends up being Josep Martinez, I'm going to be excited. I'm going to be ready to go. There's another keeper that I'm really interested in, Maduka Okoye from Udinese. At this point, I would be excited about either Martinez or Okoye. But one of those two. If we're missing out on Bento, then I need it to be one of those two. And then we have to hope that this is not a... Go ahead.
No, I'm not too high on Okoye, personally. Interesting. I think he played fantastic against us. He was a beast against Inter, but then I saw him in some other games making some real head-scratcher moves. I don't think that that's a smart goalkeeper. Even though he's got the physical attributes, he's definitely tall. He definitely is really good with his reflexes and stuff and strong in the air, which I think is important for goalkeepers to stay in age. But in terms of decision-making and recognizing where he is in goal and just his adjustments and stuff, to me, there's a lot more that needs to be worked. Like, it's Bento.
He's farther away from being that
much
keeper.
Much farther away.
Okay. I think that's
I'm
fair.
Not saying he won't get there. I think he can definitely get there. But I think he's like, if you got S tier for Bento, A tier for Josep Martinez, I would actually put Okoye in like a C tier right now. He's not even there yet. Like there's a lot that needs to be fixed.
Yeah, I would agree that he's the third. I think that he is also farther away than Josep Martinez is. Remember, he wasn't Udinese starter all season, but I think he has tremendous potential, and that's why I'm also it's a name that when it was linked to that I was interested in it. All right, let's talk about some other targets. A couple of midfielders. God, am I going to fuck this name up?
Topalovic, baby.
Luka Topalovic, a Slovenian 17, 18-year-old coming to Inter. Honestly, I don't have like a lot of stats or highlights to go off of. I know that
I'll tell you everything you need to know.
I have that last year he was listed among the top 60 best young talents born in 2006 in world football, and that he's also 6'2", big player. He looks to be really competent around the box and looks to be pretty skilled. That's all I know about him.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this guy is very technically gifted. He's someone that has been getting some comps to a more offensive-minded Sergei Milinkovic-Savic. Some people have said he's the next Modric. I think that's a little ridiculous. But there's a player there. And I jokingly said, talking to our friend Tony, that he's going to play for the Primaveras, and then he's going to be helping us win a treble in 2026. So, like, get on board with this kid. There is loads of potential, and we know how to develop some of these young kids. Now, they do great, obviously, in the Primavera and the U19s. It'll be interesting to see if he's one that, takes a step in right away, or and with the Primavera side, and then next season he gets loaned out to another Serie A club to develop a little bit further. But he's one that I am excited to see what could potentially happen. And for that price, and when you have Atalanta interested in a player like that, they did their scouting on him. So that means that this kid has definitely got loads of talent. If Atalanta, really, we should just copy whatever Atalanta is trying to do, because they find him young, they buy them cheap and then they sell them for 50, 60, 70 million, and it's disgusting what they're able to do. So I'm glad we were able to.
But they also let them play at 18, at 19. That's the difference.
That's debatable. No, you're right. but I do. I'm excited we were able to beat him to him.
So the only thing that's really holding me back from buying in on names like this, while like I see everyone hyping him up and he looks, you know, good as far as highlights are concerned, I've never watched a full 90
comes,
minutes
guys,
of him.
To be negativity.
The only thing that I would say is like, we did this before with like Agume and with other players. Like even Akin Sanmiro was getting a lot of hype. Manchester City wanted him. All this stuff. Did we ever sign Oliver Nitcham? Did we ever do that? Anyway, another player that was super, super, super like hyped as a kid. So. I just, it's hard for me to buy in at this point, especially knowing that we're not going to see him for 3 years. But if you say that he's one of the top talents and, he's got a future ahead of him, then, I'll wait and see. I'll excitedly watch Primavera for his performances.
Yeah, no, I'm not too, worried about him panning out, because I do think that he is the real deal. So I'll be interested to see. I'll probably be tuning into a lot of Primavera games that he'll be a part of.
As far as understanding if a player is the real deal, the most controversial name transfer target of the past couple weeks that's come up, that's caused such a controversy, more so because of his nationality, more than anything, in my opinion. Tanner Tessman of Venezia, the deep-lying playmaker, has been linked with a move to Inter. The reports are that he's in Inter's hands, that this is pretty much a done deal, that he will be staying at Venezia for another year, and will be making the move to Inter. The negativity that I've seen around him has nothing to do with who he is as a player, because his highlight reels and the tape on him is pretty good, and he's been really good, a big physical midfielder with technical ability that actually doesn't fit the mold of what we're used to seeing from American prospects. But it feels like Inter fans are feeling like this mercato is really unexciting. I don't think it's totally fair, given that Zielinski and Taremi already signed. The players that are being looked at right now are, potential type players that could develop. The team is strong and they don't need someone to come in from day one. They've already signed two players who have that kind of ability. So that makes me believe that this is more so something to do with his nationality. What's your feeling on the reaction to Tanner Tessman being the next man up as far as our deep lying playmakers are concerned, potentially replacing Aslani or Hakan down the line?
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you on it being because of his nationality. I mean, sure, I think that's looked at as a bonus. I'm not saying that they don't take that into account at all, but this is a player who had a fantastic season in Serie B. He's been playing in Italy for 3 years now.
I meant the Inter fans' reaction. Not Inter signing him because he's American.
Yeah, no, and I would disagree with them still. Because I was saying, he's a player who's been performing for 3 years in Italy. It's not like he's an MLS reject and we're signing him just to sell jerseys. This is a guy who can step in. They're talking about it being a straight swap for Orsitanio, no money going the other way. To me, that's a slam dunk. So, if you're getting upset over a player who's coming in, no money was spent on him. Even if he is the biggest disappointment ever, but you could sell him after you spent nothing, that's a win. So, I'm okay with the move. I like the player. you know, and to be honest, I wasn't high on it at first because initially it looked like it was going to be Orsitanio and Stankovic, and I did not like that. I thought that was not a good idea, so I was against it initially. But now when they're saying it's going to be one or the other, and hopefully not Philippe, but you know, I'm fine if it's Orsitanio or if it's even Alexander Stankovic, who I'm not as high on as I am, you know, his brother who's the goalkeeper. I think it's a win-win, and we could actually he would stay on loan at Venezia, so we could watch his growth in Serie A, see him going up against, you know, the talent that he would be, you know, playing against if he was at Inter. I kind of got into it with somebody on Twitter about it, and they were saying that, you know, this isn't the kind of quality player that Inter should be signing. You need depth players. You can't have, you know, world number, you know, top 11 players at every position and the backups. No one's going to want to be coming off the bench when they're considered one of the top players. We don't have the money to buy all top players. So it's like, this is a very good piece of business. And listen, Average Joe said it best, our buddy who's been on the podcast a couple times. He said if his name was, you know, Tino Tasomano or whatever the name, you know, you'd be thrilled with the move.
It's true.
But it's because he's an American that people are having a problem with it. And they're thinking like, oh, this is all, you know, Oak Tree is doing this to push more American. Buddy, he's not even going to be on the team next year. So like what benefit does Oak Tree see in it right now then?
Like, but if you're thinking even about- that argument is so interesting to me, because even if that was the case, right? Like, let's say, oh, you shouldn't be signing players just for the commercial aspect. Okay. But let's say they do that and he ends up opening up Inter to a new audience of fans in America, that he doesn't end up playing a lot of games, but people just tune in because someone from, you know, the U.S. men's national team it breaks through and is playing for one of the top clubs in Europe, and it leads to a bunch of revenue for Inter. He doesn't turn out, and it is what it is. Like, who cares? We're not spending $50 million on the kid. Like, at most, they're going to spend, at most, it's going to be around 5 to 7 million if they're going to spend any money. That's not a huge investment. And the potential, even if it was for a commercial, like, it'll probably even out. Or at least that's the hope. It's not that big of a deal. It's not that big of a deal. So people that are getting outraged over being linked to a player who is going to be on loan next year, and you're buying him purely for potential, like, what are you doing? What are you doing? It's the same thing with the, like, people that were rooting for Tejan to fail. Like, why? It's not the sexiest signing in the world, but they didn't spend a lot of money. You understand the position that your club is in, right? They have to buy low-cost players that can become something. Like, what's your problem?
And to the people who were like, oh, why didn't we just buy Belanova instead? Well, at the time, we didn't have the money. But if you look at it, we bought Buchanan after we won the Supercopa, which gave us what? 8 million euros. You know, you have to have money available to be able to do these types of signings. Would I have loved Belanova at this club? Absolutely. I did. I thought I was very upset when we didn't.
Me
you
too.
Know, just, you know, take them up on the $7 million agreement. Like, I thought that was really dumb for us not to do that. But I am actually very happy still, you know, with bringing in Buchanan. I liked everything that I have seen so far. It's crazy to me that people are, like, rooting for these guys to, like, fail at Inter.
It's like bad fandom. I don't want to tell people how to be fans, but, like, if you're actively rooting for players on your own team to not make it because you want to be right about your agenda, you don't care about Inter. You care about looking good on Twitter, making a call on a certain player or not. It's embarrassing.
I've said it a million times, and I'll say it again. I don't root against Denzel Dumfries. I don't ever want Denzel Dumfries to fail. Just because I don't like him and I don't like the things that he's done and whatever, that doesn't mean I'm rooting against him. I would much rather be proven wrong week in and week out and made fun of on this podcast every single week that he has a great game, instead of being right. I don't relish in being right. I may jokingly do it on here, but I don't enjoy it because I care about Inter. That's all I really care about. And I want my club to win every trophy available to them, to be in every single tournament possible, to be able to be as successful as they possibly can be, because that to me is what matters. And I don't care if the guy is American. I don't care if the guy is, you know, whatever nationality you don't like. I don't care where he comes from, as long as he helps us win.
Yeah. Well, that's, and I, you know, what I brought up earlier, like, these, this, the unsexiness of these names. Think about the names that we talked about. Joseph Martinez, not the sexiest name, unheralded at Genoa. Topalovic, Tanner Tesman was a Serie B player. Alex Perez, the 18-year-old Real Betis Primavera player that would be coming in and would be spending time on the Primavera. Not a sexy name. And these are all interesting prospect type players. Don't, your team won the Scudetto last year. There aren't many starters that are departing. You're not trying to replace DiMarco. The one starter that you're really trying to replace is Dumfries if he ends up leaving. But you're not trying to replace Thuram or Lautaro. You want to argue that you're trying to replace Mkhitaryan? Okay, well, they brought in Zielinski. So, like, you're not, they're not trying to get these huge players. The only players that have left the club have been depth pieces. Sensi, Klaassen, those are depth pieces. What are you guys getting mad about? Like, what are we doing? We're talking about players with potential. They're not signing, like, Rodri.
And Juve hasn't even done anything yet. You know, like, we're getting, you know, we're, oh, they're, oh, that's, they're strengthening.
That's a, they're great strengthening. Point.
It's like, oh, that's, these guys are strengthening.
Because,
oh,
that's okay. Why they're getting mad. Yeah.
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 You know, so they're freaking out because AC Milan might get Joshua Zirkzee. You know, Juve might get Calafiori, which, with all due respect to them, Bologna looks like they're trying to play hardball on all the prices that they want to get paid. They're not selling people just to sell people. You know, they know they have the Champions League to play in. So, because also Calafiori, 50% of his, whatever he gets sold for, goes to FC Basel, they're actually looking to get 50 to 60 million so that they can get 25 to 30 million for themselves, which is what they initially wanted. So I hope that they stand firm on their price point, because you got to make it difficult for Juve to get these types of players. And yes, they got Thiago Motta, but hey, look, for those of you who are worried about Thiago Motta, were you worried about him when he was at Spezia? Were you worried about him when he was at Genoa before that? And he was stinking up the pitch on both those teams. I mean, he was able to keep Spezia up, but then he left. And then now Bologna is when he finally, like, took off, which I'm happy for him, but I don't consider him an Inter legend either. People are upset, like, oh, how could he do that? How could he go? He was a very good player on a treble winning side. But to me, the legends on that team are Milito, Schneider, Maicon, Eto, Julio Cesar, and Zanetti. Those are the legends. Samuel, too. Don't forget
Lucio.
Samuel. I don't even know if I would say he's a legend. Like, I'm talking about, like, guys who actually, like, wore the kit and maybe not had long tenures in the terms of Schneider and Eto. However, what they did was massive in the kit. Thiago Motta had a couple of nice games, a couple of nice goals. But I think any real Interista would not say that he was a legend at Inter. So,
yeah, I think you shouldn't judge your mercato based off of what your rivals are doing. That's the first thing.
What they might be doing, or what they're doing.
I read the Gazzetta every day. I get the digital edition. I remember a couple weeks ago, Benjamin Sesko was the front page of La Gazzetta dello Sport. It was basically confirming that he was coming to Milan. And what happened to that? So, like, stop getting worked up over rumors regarding your rivals, number one. That's not how you should judge your team's transfer market. And number two, I just want to hit you with a couple numbers. The gap to second place with Milan was 19 points. The gap to Juventus was 23 points. 23 points. There's a gap. Both of those teams.
Suddenly, Di Gregorio and Motta is going to close that gap. Like,
both of those teams are going to get better. 100%. They are going to be better than they were last year. Inter could be better too. Taremi is already two times the player that Arnautovic and Alexis were coming off the bench. Zielinski, have you been watching Serie A for the past 11 years?
The guy's a baller. A baller. Relax. We're talking about prospects. We're talking about keeper. we're talking about a kid that's going to be on loan.
Like, this guy knows what he's doing. Has he ever led us astray? Has he ever brought... There may have been guys that we all scratched our head at, but then they ended up working out. I wasn't too thrilled about Mkhitaryan. I still don't really love him. But you know what? He is a consistent performer for most of the part, most of the time, I should say. You know, like, I wasn't head over heels in love with, oh my gosh, now I'm drawing a blank now. With Edin Dzeko. Like, I wasn't, like, crazy about it either. I was like, this is who you're bringing in to replace Romelu Lukaku. And look at what he did. Yes, he faded late in the years, but you know what? Like, these guys know what to do. They know how to work in the constraints that we have. So I am going to continue to trust that they have, obviously, Inter's best interests, not even just for next season, but for long term, to be able to have sustainable success and be able to refresh the group repeatedly, year after year, and tweak it here and there, and bring in pieces that will just continue to help this team to be successful on all fronts.
That just jogged my mind for the other thing that I think is super important to consider here. Topalovic is 17, 18 years old. Alex Perez is 18 years old. Tanner Tessman is 22 years old. Joseph Martinez is older. He is 26 years old. But you're talking about younger players. Inter is not signing shit quality players. They're signing prospects, or they're working on signing prospects. It's a difference. You can't make a judgment on a kid's career that young into it. Not quality player. What do you? You don't know. You have no idea what that player is going to become. Look at Hakan when he was 26 years old, 27 years old. Everyone thought he was trash. You don't know what that player is going to become. So just, you know, instead of taking the tact of like, what is this? Oh, we're signing a shit American for commercial purposes, whatever. Why don't you just like go do a little research? Go watch a game that he played. Watch some highlight reels. Just get to know the kid a little bit before you start completely shitting
when
on
you
it.
When you watch those highlight reels, look at the Trivella pass he has from 30 to 40 yards out for a winger cross field. Gorgeous.
He has a level of technique that you do not associate with Americans. And that's why I'm saying, before you go on Twitter and make a comment, we're signing an American only because we're owned by Americans, just go look at the player. Don't worry about his nationality. Just go take a look at him. He doesn't look like Alexi Lalas. It's a little different. It looks a little different.
Like, I think people envision that we're going to get like Michael Bradley or Kyle Beckerman, that freaking dreaded player who was like absolutely like just a mess all over the pitch. Not every American is like that. And, you know, for people who are saying like, oh, there's no Americans, you know, who are good enough to play for this club. I'm sorry, but Christian Pulisic is definitely good enough to play at Inter. Tyler Adams is good enough to play at Inter. Giovanni Reina is good enough to play at Inter. I'm not saying that these are guys that we should target or go after, but to say that there aren't any Americans who are good enough to play for this club is crazy. And Tessman, yes, he might be a little bit more, he's a little bit more raw than those other guys, but I do like that he's been playing in Serie A, Serie B, and has a little bit of an understanding of what's expected in these leagues and kind of knows how to dictate tempo. And if you watch those compilations, you could see a little bit of Brozovic in his game. You could see a little bit of SMS in his game. I'm not saying he's going to reach those levels, so please don't twist my words or don't try to like say, oh, Johnny said this. I'm saying that there is a little elements in those players' games that translate to his.
6 goals and 3 assists from deep lying playmaker is like, you understand Çalhanoğlu scored, you know, double digit goals because he was taking every penalty, right? 6 goals from the Regista spot. He played 3,000 minutes last year. Started 35 games.
He scored a screamer of a free kick from 30, 35 yards out. I mean,
he's made 100 appearances for Venezia. That's not like
a joke. They'll give
that's
up
not,
on
that's
you.
That's not 100 like, that's appearances not... for FC Dallas, guys. That's Venezia.
Yeah, I'm excited. Let's see. And also, like, you don't necessarily have to treat it like this is Hakan's heir. Aslani needs to hold on to his job at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
He's on watch.
You gotta push Aslani a little bit. He's on watch.
He's on watch.
All right, Johnny, I went over my time here by a lot. So, are you ready to wrap up?
Yeah.
Okay. Do we have any announcements for the people?
So the kits for me, not for you guys, but like it was I did not calculate tax, so it's a little bit more than I was anticipating. I'm hoping to get that squared away this week, though, to have that all ordered. Once I do, for those of those people in the States and in Canada, it looks like your total will be around $80 with everything, for the kit and shipping. For the couple of European people I know who I will still have to calculate that, just because I haven't been able to figure out how to get the pricing on shipping on that to you guys. But it looks like, yeah, all in, it'll be $80 for you guys. I am so sorry this is taking so long. But in reality, like, it's coming out to like around $1,700 out of my pocket right now. So, like, I'm just trying to take care of that. I don't know what works best for you guys. Venmo, PayPal, Cash App. I don't know what Canada even has any of those, or how you guys kind of send money to friends or whatever. But if you are buying it, just reach out to me and we can figure out what works to kind of get that taken care of. I've had a few people already do it. Actually, just one person already do it. But anyway. It's coming, and they're also kind of up my ass about getting this done, because they obviously just want to get started on it, and it takes about 5 to 6 weeks to get them all done and shipped to us, to then be able to get it out to you guys. So yeah.
All right, so if you put in for a jersey, just reach out to Johnny and
yeah. And we'll outside of out. Me and Alessandro, there was like 21 of you guys who did. So thank you, first off. Like, that's awesome. I'm glad we were able to do this. This was something I really wanted to do because it looked cool. I got to see not our kit, but I got to see another kit that Jersey Bird made for another team. And I actually loved the way it looked. I loved the way it felt. So, yeah, I'm excited to get these.
Me too. They're going to look amazing. All right, guys, we'll be with you all summer long as both international tournaments and the transfer market unfolds. So looking forward to doing more of these summer pods. And if there are things that you want to hear from us over the summer, whether it's, you know, player breakdowns or anything like that, just like let us know, you know, tweet at us. We're all ears. We love making content for you guys. So looking forward to hearing from you. All right. In the words of the great Roberto Scarpini, forza ragazzi, forza ragazzi, forza ragazzi.